Just because you need to talk to your IBM mainframe doesn't mean you need to talk to IBM.
Hello, and welcome to the Coldcast, the best 30 plus minute app conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Aaron Elijah. Joining me today, Spanish pubs were puzzled as to why ale revenues and chair fights both skyrocketed in the last 3 weeks, but we know why. Back at Culta Mac Global Headquarters, Leander Caney is here.
Hola.
Also with us, he had almost forgotten what a middle-aged man in tight spandex looks like. But this morning, LK reminded him. Lewis Wallace is here.
My eyes!
Leander rolls in with that bike outfit. Looking very aerodynamic.
clicking on the tiles with those little bikey shoes.
Trying to have the office meeting while he does his morning stretches. Just plops his foot right up onto your desk. Give him the hammy a nice stretch.
So fragrant.
I have to do that wired.
Really? Why am I not surprised? Is that why you're no longer there? They're like, yeah, HR has asked us to have you not work here anymore.
It was a contributing factor for sure.
Welcome back, Leander. How was your mega world trip? You were gone for like, what, 14 weeks, it feels like.
It was like three. It was fantastic. You know, southern Spain, you can't beat it. We went all around Andalusia, all these different cities.
Yeah.
All of it totally beautiful. Visit Barcelona, Granada, Seville, which I haven't been to. That's
been there.
Place.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fantastic town, isn't it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was really hot when I was there. What was it like when you were there?
Really,
I would imagine.
Cold. Really,
okay.
Cold.
Yeah, right.
But it was sunny, but it was cold.
When you were in Barcelona, did you happen to see a naked man walking through the back alleyways?
I did not.
You didn't see him. Okay. I wonder if he's still there.
What? Who is it?
It's just a naked man. There's a guy that lived there that was naked. No. You missed the story because you were gone. You were there. I was hoping maybe you'd see him. When I went there on vacation, there was a guy that just lived there, and he would walk around the entire city naked. And I told this story, I think, last week. I was in Barcelona watching like a street performance, and it was in this narrow alleyway, and I was grooving out, man. This guy was playing sax, and he was real good. And I was just like, oh, yeah, I have my eyes closed, right? And I'm looking down, and I'm jamming. And I look up, and I open my eyes, and there's a big pair of white butt cheeks right in front of my face. And this guy is walking casually like he's on a Sunday stroll, completely nude from head to toe. No shoes, no shirt, no bandana. And he just walks through the entire crowd and just turns the corner and just goes on his merry way. And I was thinking maybe you saw him too.
Well, no, it sounds like San Francisco. I mean, there's plenty of guys like that around here. But I didn't see anyone nude. And it would have been too cold in Barcelona, you know, like for...
Yeah, maybe he wears something when during the wintertime, you know.
Right, he's probably got a furry, like, little sort of pom-pom.
A furry pom-pom. I was thinking like a wool chili peppers sock on or something.
Yeah, right.
Well, it's good to have you back. We have so much Apple news to talk about. Here's what we got. Oh, boy, we've got a good show. Just wait. I've got a surprise for you coming in about 10 seconds. We're going to talk about the state of robocalls, which we'll just touch on briefly. If you live in the U.S., have you noticed how many robocalls you're getting? I used to never get robocalls, and I'm getting like a ton of them now. I get 5, 6, 7 a day on my iPhone now. It's crazy. So I thought it would be interesting to at least talk about what's going on. And then big news this week, the Germinator over at Bloomberg. He's a close personal friend of mine. And he broke a story this week talking about not just what Apple is going to be releasing in 2019. He's going to 2020. He's going all the way out there. He's telling you what Apple's going to do. I don't even think Apple knows what they're going to do in 2020. But apparently Mark Gurman does.
Well, they got a roadmap now, so now they know what to do.
There
now
you go.
Laid it up for them.
Well, they could use all the ideas they can get for the iPhone especially. So some interesting developments in the world of iPhone and then also iPad. And so we'll talk about all that stuff. Another big story this week, huge global news. Apple plans a Netflix for Games subscription service broken by one Mr. Alex E. Heath. Oh, I hate to say it. I hate to say that he's the one that broke this because you guys know I can't stand Alex E. Heath.
No one can. Not even his own mom.
Look, this was a big story, and of course, predictably, he starts blowing me up. He starts texting me. He starts hitting me up on Twitter, and he basically begged me. I mean begged, groveled, to get on the show. And I said, look, dude, I'm not bringing you on the main show, but we can record a one-on-one segment. I'll cut it in if it's any good. So I recorded an interview with Alex E. Heath, and it's really, honestly, it's terrible. It's really bad. And you probably should just skip over it and get to the next segment. But if you want to listen to it, it's going to be cut in here in about 20 minutes or so. And once that segment's over, we are going to do an all-new Under Review where we talk about the gadgets that we're currently testing out. And I've got a good one, actually, this week. I've got something that's not only is it super sexy, but it's highly practical. And if you need something like this, you're going to be really excited to know that it exists. And you may not know that you need it until I talk about it. So we'll do that at the end of the show. Before we dive into the first story of the week, Leander, tell us about the official password manager of Cultimac and Cultimac Global Headquarters.
Indeed, yeah. So renewed for the second year, the official password manager of Cultimac is Dashlane. Mm. It's a really nice, really easy to use password manager. So easy to use that my mom uses it, and I made a video showing her how she uses the this password manager. And you know, like in this day and age, if you're not, you've got to be using a password manager. It is. It should be bundled with every computer and every phone. It's crazy not to. And Dashlane has all of the features you'd expect from a modern password manager. It generates, you know, super secure passwords. It remembers them for you. Now, thanks to iOS, the latest update of iOS, it'll fill in passwords on apps as well as websites. So it can be used all across the board, and you can set it to be your default way to remember passwords, so it works across devices, which Apple's password, iCloud password manager doesn't. It works with Face ID. So, you don't even have to do anything anymore. You just, look at the phone, it unlocks it, and then it fills in all your passwords, and it's super, super secure. You know, you just got to have one. You really, really do have to have a password manager. It's crazy not to. There was, a big data dump of bajillions of passwords onto the dark web, just recently. And, I looked it up, and it saw that all of my passwords, all my emails, sorry. So you can plug in your email. Have I been pawned? All my emails have been pawned, So there's my emails with associated passwords are floating out there. And thank goodness, for a long time ago, I stopped using this. Because I used to do what everyone does, which is use the same password or variations of the same password on every site. That's the very worst thing you can do, because as soon as they get one, that's it. They can use that password and try to crack all these different services using that password. And a lot of people still do this. It's crazy. It's madness. Dashlane, the official password of Cultimac. One of the nicest things it has about it is the security dashboard, which tells you it gives you an overview of the health of all your passwords. And it'll has a fantastic feature where it'll automatically go out and replace passwords for you with select sites and select services.
It can do that on its own?
Yeah, it's fantastic. They've struck deals with a whole bunch of different, big companies and services like the BBC. I think there's some banks. I mean, it did about 40 passwords for me when I first used it. It is mental because it's fantastic. It just goes out, it contacts all of these services one by one, and you can watch it doing it. And it'll replace your old password and generate a new secure one and then remember it. So you don't even have to do anything. You don't have to go to these sites anymore. I mean, I wish it had it for every single password. I wish it did that for every single password
sure.
you have. Unfortunately, they have to strike a deal with the companies, and get it to be, get them to implement whatever it is to make it compatible. But it worked with a whole bunch of pretty big mainstream ones, and it saved me a whole bunch of time. I thought that was fantastic. I was like, man, if it can only do this for every single password you have, this would be this would be amazing. This would be gold.
I'm sold. Okay, I'm sold. What do I do?
Okay, so head to cultofdashlane.com.
Dashlane.com.
That's DASHLANE.com / cult of Mac. And you can download it for free, and it's free for one device. But if you want to use it on more than one device, which you more than likely will do, it is $59 a year.
Or they also have a monthly fee, too, if you want to go that route, right?
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out what that is. I think it's $4.99 a month.
I think it's $4.99 a month, yeah. Or you get a, I guess, a discount if you do the entire year. All right.
Right.
Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Dashlane.com/Cultamac. Fast, safe, powerful password protection. So easy. Not only can Leander figure it out, so can his mummy. I mean, how much easier can it
get? Checking out the video with mummy, because, you know, like, it was all totally unscripted. You know, she's totally into it now. She has huge problems with her passwords.
We should post that in the show notes, just because people will probably love to see you just sit there with your mom and try to use Dashlane. Right.
It's pretty fun, yeah.
All right, Dashlane.com/Cultamac. Let's do this first story real fast. Here's how crazy spam calls went in 2018. I'm not kidding. I probably receive 8 calls a day. Do you guys get calls too?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. I got about 4 today.
I mean, I've pretty much just stopped answering my phone. If I don't know who the number is, I don't answer it anymore, because it's always a telemarketer, and they always say at the end of the call, if you would like to opt out of this call service, please press 3 now. And then you press 3 and it's like, thank you. We will remove your number in 72 hours. Have a good day. And then it's gone. And then they call you the next day and every day thereafter, because you just confirmed your phone number, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I guess on all these other lessons, all these other people start calling you.
I wonder how they got my phone number. Anyway, so a new report from call identification and blocking company, Hiya. I'm not sure how you say that. It's one of the two. It depends. Anyway, yeah, shows just how bad these spam calls have gotten. Released today, the State of Phone Call Report is based on data from 11 billion calls, analyzed monthly. The report includes breakdowns of the types of calls made or received, how often phone calls were answered, and the average duration. The biggest takeaway from the report is there's been a huge increase in robocalls, a 46% increase in 2018 to a total of 26.3 billion robocalls. I'm guessing this is just in the U.S. It doesn't say here, but I'm presuming that
just in your phone.
A lot of calls.
I know. I think this is illegal too. And we have the that FCC list where you can put the phone number in and report them. So right. I actually added that to my bookmark. So every time they call, I go ahead and report them. But I read the fine print. It doesn't do crap. They just say, thank you for reporting this. If we get enough reports, we may investigate. So they literally do nothing. It's just you report the phone number. It makes you feel good. And then that's all you can do.
Well, a lot of these calls are coming from overseas, like call centers now, right? I remember when the FCC list came out, you know, the do not call list. That was initially really effective, wasn't it? Do you remember that? When it killed spam calls almost overnight. And I remember, my God, this is fantastic. You know, this is really works really well. But of course, like these days, it doesn't work at all. And, you know, like a lot of them spoof you, like your area code and the first 3 digits of your phone number. Have you noticed that?
I have noticed the area code thing, which seems to be a new development. And I think that's why it's so effective now, because previously they would call you from some weird area code, right, and you would just not answer. But now it comes from Seattle area code. So I'm like, is this someone from Seattle? It makes you actually want to answer it.
Yeah, and then you pick up, and then it's like some gibberish Chinese, right?
Sometimes it actually is Chinese. I've received calls that are actually in Chinese.
Well, I get loads of those.
Right, and I get voicemails in Chinese too. Yeah. It's like, so it's completely, it's completely undirected. You know, they set the machines loose and they're just calling anybody.
It's totally out of control. Actually, one time I got so fed up, this person kept calling. So I get calls from Marriott. They keep calling me. They call me every single day. And finally, I stayed on the line and said that I was actually interested in the offer, so it would connect me to a human. And so finally it connects a human, and this woman starts going into her spiel about she needs to check to see if I qualify for the vacation offer. And I just interrupt her and I say, look, I'm not interested in the vacation offer. And she goes, you're not? I said, no, I want to know why you keep calling me. Do you realize this is illegal? And she just goes dead silent. And I said, hello, this is illegal. You can't just keep calling me. I've already reported this number several times. Why do you keep calling me? Silence. But I can hear the other people in the call center talking. So she's still on the line. She's just not saying anything. So she's probably in panic mode. So I'm like, hello, hello. And she's just sitting there. And we're in this telephone conversation for like 3 minutes. She won't hang up. So I'm like, look, I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to wait for you to talk to me. And then I would be silent, and she wouldn't say anything.
She didn't say anything?
No, she sat there in dead silence. But I could hear everybody else at the call center talking, so I knew she was still there. And I'm like, look, I'm not going anywhere, lady, until you tell me why you keep calling me. Hello? And then eventually I start laughing, and I'm like, well, this is just getting weird. You're making this weird. It's awkward now because I know that you're there. I know that you can hear me, but you're not saying anything. I'm not going anywhere, lady. We're going to be here for a half an hour. And then like probably like 6 to 10 minutes into the call, she finally hung up. I just sat there and just kept her on the phone with me, and she would not hang up.
Well, that's really weird. Well, you'd think she would say something or do something or just hang up because, you know, like time is money for her, right? So she needs to be making volumes of calls.
I think it was probably... No one ever does that to her, so she was just so taken aback. She didn't know what to do. She probably had, like, her hand over the receiver, and she's, like, calling her manager over to ask, like,
I've heard people who have, like, whistles. You know, they blow a whistle down the phone.
Yeah.
Which is really, you know, I think that's a little bit...
I think it's appropriate.
A little bit mean.
No, I think it's... If I could shoot mace into the phone and have it spray out on the other end, I think I would probably do that.
Mace or diarrhea.
Jeez. If I could spray diarrhea into the other side of the phone all through her headset, I would figure out a way to do that.
I think that's a little bit
I'd be
mean.
Unbuckling my pants every time a phone number came through that I didn't recognize.
Zero, dear.
Is that too hardcore? You're right. That might be taking it too far, especially since my iPhone costs like $800 plus tax. So anyway, there you have it. If you're receiving a lot of telemarketer calls, you're not alone, and it's okay to be mad and to abuse the people on the other end of the line. Well, you know, just keep them on the phone so they can't call other people. Let's move on to the big story of the week. Apple is planning 3D cameras for new iPhones in an AR push. Let's start with 2020. This is the Germinator story, and he takes it all the way out to 2020. And he talks about the devices that we can see then. And I bet Tim Cook was reading this thinking, hey, there's some good ideas here, y'all. Lewis, fill us in. Plan for 2020. What do we got?
Yeah. So according to Gurman, Apple plans to launch iPhones with a more powerful 3D camera as soon as next year. Stepping up the company's push into augmented reality. It's rear-facing, longer-range 3D camera designed to scan the environment. Supposedly, it would create three-dimensional reconstructions of the real world and would work from up to 15 feet from the device. And unlike the, you know, Face ID camera, which shoots dots at your face, this would be laser-powered. Laser-powered 3D camera. Would it enhance the augmented reality capabilities of the iPhone, letting you, giving you more accurate depth perception and placement of virtual objects. Could also help the handset take photos that can capture depth better. You know, maybe right. This could be used to make the fantastic software aspects of the phone camera even better.
Even more fantastic.
Even more fantastic, yes. Boost the fantasticness. Other features that are supposedly coming in 2020 would be a third, more advanced camera, advanced photo capture tools. I'm not sure exactly what he's talking about there. And more powerful chip. Wow, really? You think so?
So well, the laser-powered camera was rumored for this year's phones. Because I remember that rumor bouncing around last year.
So maybe it got moved. Maybe it's not ready. I mean, it is laser-powered. So it's some high-tech equipment going into the phone. Maybe it wasn't ready yet.
Right.
But I was looking at the 2019 predictions here. And without lasers, if you're not going to add lasers, it's not looking that exciting. I'm just going to be honest with you guys. We get all new models with, of course, faster Apple processors and faster Face IDs. And I'm sure that we will get better cameras marginally as well. But the phones are all expected to look the same. So not going to be any huge improvements this year, it doesn't look like. But I'm all for whatever they can do to make the camera better. The camera on the XR, I'm a broken record about this. I know I've said this 1,000 times. It is so good. And again, it's the same camera for the most part on the XS, XS Max. Of course, you can't take the same portrait mode photographs because the XR has the wide angle portrait mode photographs and the and the XS, XS Max, you know, it's got the zoomed in telephoto portrait mode photos, which I don't particularly like. So anything they can do to add to that computational smart HDR, that computational photography, I am all for. The XR now is so good that I often, honestly, people scoff at me when I say this, but I really do mean it. I will oftentimes just leave my nice camera at home because the XR takes such great pictures that you just don't really need to bring an actual camera with you in many instances. Now, of course, there are situations where you would want to do it because a mirrorless camera or a full-on DSLR is going to take better photos in many instances, in many situations. But if you're just taking pictures of your kiddos or your spouse at a birthday party or something, man, the iPhone takes good pics. I mean, it makes me look great.
Are you going to submit any pics to Apple's contest, shot on iPhone contest?
I'm glad that you asked that because I'm doing a project in collaboration with Nudifier. And I'm doing a full body image of me standing in front of a mirror. And I'm holding nothing but a Persian cat in one arm. And then I'm going to nudify the parts that, you know, can't be shown in public. You can't post that on a bus. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
You're going to need a taller bus. So I'm using Nudifier for those aspects. And I think I'm going to submit that and see how they like it. What do you think? What about you, Leanne? Are you going to post any pictures of your kids or something?
I don't know. I was looking through my pictures, you know, I took on vacation. They're all crummy, unfortunately. But
There's some things the XR can't fix.
I'm going to dig one up. I was actually cycling my bike across the Golden Gate Bridge the other day at the weekend. Mm-hmm. And they had a worker who was hanging off the side. And I was like, man, that's a crazy pic. So I turned around and tried to snap a picture of him, risking life and limb in the bike lane because there's all these, you know, people going whizzing by. And then when I got home to look at it, it was completely rubbish. So I don't know. I'll have to see something. You know, like I was kind of tempted to submit something. You know, like but the quality of the pictures they get are amazing, aren't they? I mean,
yeah.
You know the stuff they put on the billboards and all the shot on iPhone campaigns. And some of the example ones they had, you know, that's a really high bar. But, you know, there's no doubt that they can take beautiful pictures. Have you seen the shade that Google's been throwing on the phone with the Pixel 3, especially with the night mode?
No, I haven't seen it. I kind of ignore those ads because I think they're so ridiculous to say that one camera is so much better than another. I think they're also similar at this point.
You know, the night mode thing is like, you know, it's computational photography, isn't it? I mean, you know, they're enhancing these low light pictures. The trouble is that they look really unrealistic. You know, it's like HDR got on acid. Mm-hmm. It's gone crazy. You know, they're really, really, the ones they show, you know, look great, but I've seen some, you know, that weren't shot by Google for advertising purposes and they look really strange. You know, they're so, they're so unnatural.
And yeah, it looks like something out of an Alice in Wonderland acid trip.
Yeah, right. So, you know, like, and there's a debate to be had, you know, like, are they, because they're so, you know, the 10S, I think, makes really nice low light pictures. I mean, it's not a bad low light camera, but, you know, they don't enhance it, so it's unnatural. They still look somewhat natural. They look, you know, like kind of like what you saw with your eyes. Whereas the Pixel stuff is going, you know, really way into the, you know, it goes above and beyond what you see. And sometimes the effect is kind of cool, you know, like HDR pictures, you know, sometimes you like that. It's sometimes going to be like really aesthetically pleasing, but it's not natural.
That's always been the problem with HDR. And I think that is one of the things I like about the smart HDR feature with the new iPhones is they're done in such an artful way. They add to the photo instead of just slapping together a bunch of images and, you know, raising the shadows and bringing down the highlights.
Right.
They have done it in a very artistic way so that I think the photos actually oftentimes look better than they would have otherwise.
Because you get all that detail in the shadows, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. Which is something that I generally would have to do by editing the photo after the fact. And the iPhone, it just does that for me on its own. And it doesn't get it right every single time. And I think where HDR struggles the most is in dark circumstances because it will try to take the shadows and it will try to boost them. And oftentimes that if the scene is really dark, that will introduce noise or it just looks fake because shadows don't normally look like mid-tones. And the iPhone will sometimes take those shadows and boost them up too much. And so they don't look dark anymore. They just look weird. And so that's when things really start looking like a bad acid trip. But if you're not taking pictures in pitch black, oftentimes, especially if you're in a bright scenario, man, the iPhone will take pictures that are better. Again, I'm gonna get heat. People are gonna come after me for saying this on Twitter, but I really do think it's true. Sometimes the iPhone takes pictures that are better than a DSLR because of the Smart HDR. It's able to balance the shadows, bring them up, bring down the highlights, and so it takes a picture that has a more balanced dynamic range, and that is something that if you were to try to emulate with a DSLR, you would have to have a really expensive camera to pull off that particular look. In fact, there are cameras that they use in the movies. Like, for example, there's a company called Arri. They make Arri Alexa cameras, and they are a really popular digital camera that is used throughout Hollywood to make movies. And these cameras cost like $100,000. They're really expensive pieces of equipment. And that doesn't even account for all the other batteries and lenses and everything. You're looking at body only, you know, for a camera that can have a wide dynamic range and can take really beautiful images in low light and in bright situations. And now the iPhone is on an Arri Alexa, but it mimics that in a convincing way in many scenarios. And you can tell it's not exactly the same, but there's this guy I actually follow on YouTube who did a video, and he was comparing, I kid you not, he compared the iPhone XS to the Arri Alexa, and he took video from both, and he compared them in a YouTube video, and he didn't mark which one was which. And there were some scenarios where I honestly could not tell which was which. That's how good the iPhone has gotten. Mm-hmm. So, well, there Soderbergh, you go. Take that for what it's worth.
He's Steven Soderbergh, the Hollywood director, just shot another movie on the iPhone. And did he pledge to do all of his movies from now on iPhones?
No way.
Yeah. This remember. Is like his second or third movie that he's done. I haven't seen them, so I can't.
Neither has anybody else, because they suck.
Because they're terrible, right? They're on YouTube, but...
Steven Soderbergh, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm writing that down. I'm going to have to check it out. Steven Soderbergh. I'm gonna check those out on YouTube.
Well, I saw that one. There was a famous one. It was the first full-length movie shot on iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Set in L.A., Street Hustlers. What was it called? Oh, heck. It was actually really pretty good. It was really beautiful looking.
Tangerine.
It was nice. Yeah. It was actually, you couldn't tell it was shot on a phone. It didn't have that phone aesthetic. It looked like a movie to me.
Hmm. Cinematic.
Yeah.
Balanced.
Yeah.
Creamy.
Yeah.
I'm gonna check it out. Tangerine. Is that on YouTube?
I don't know. I can't remember. I didn't see the whole movie. I just saw a bit of it. But
okay. So it wasn't good enough to actually make you want to watch the whole thing.
I can't remember. I caught it by accident. Like channel surfing.
Okay.
And I was like, oh man, this is the shot. This was, and I recognized it. I was like, oh, this is the one that was shot on the iPhone. So I watched it for a little bit to see, how good it looked.
All righty. Well, I'll put some notes or some links to this stuff in the show notes if you guys want to check it out, especially that iPhone XS/Arri Alexa video, which I thought was really interesting. And this guy is I don't know if he's a director of photography or if he just does a lot of video work for a living, but he will make videos oftentimes that compare the Arri cameras because they are like the best of the best. Like they shot the new Blade Runner with Arri Alexa cameras, and that movie looks incredible. And he will compare that camera to other cameras just to kind of give you a feel for what they look like. Really interesting stuff. I think his YouTube name is Potato Jet, and I don't know what the hell that means.
Okay.
Actually,
I don't either, but I want one.
It really kind of bugs me. Like the name is so bad that I get a little bit annoyed every time I see it. But he makes great videos. I'll post a link to the show notes or in the show notes. What?
Did you gloss over the most distressing part of this 2019 news? Supposedly only the XS Max successor will include the three cameras.
So I did gloss over this didn't I?
Talking about that nightmare scenario for me.
Yes, and this is something that we talked about previously, and Gurman is confirming it here again.
Second time this has come up, and it's I don't like this at all.
I don't either. So in case you missed it, Lewis was just saying that for 2019, the only camera that is slated to have three, or the only phone that is slated to have three cameras, is the iPhone XS Max. So if you want the extra camera, you're going to have to spend the extra money to get the extra phone, to get the extra size for your pockets.
If you like,
that either.
A normal size phone like the XS, you're going to be screwed. You're going to be
pleb.
Using...
You're a pleb. Yeah. You don't get the extra camera.
This is going to I'm going to find this very upsetting.
I know. I think this is dumb. I really don't like that they do this. I like that we had parity finally between the two premium iPhones, but
yes.
Gotta get that cash grab, y'all. So gotta put a feature in to make you spend the extra money. And I'm glad that you actually interrupted me, because I was getting ready to move on, and there's a bunch of other tidbits that we should mention. So apparently Apple is testing out USB-C on iPhone, indicating that they may eventually lose Lightning and move to USB entirely. I would actually be happy if they did this. I'm tired of carrying around all these different cables. And now that I'm using USB-C on my Mac and my iPad, okay, fine. You got me. Just give me USB-C on my iPhone too, and I guess also on my AirPods. And let's just use one cable for everything, okay, y'all? Because I'm tired of carrying around different cables for different stuff. And I'm just going to read you this paragraph that Mark wrote here outright, because I was going to try to summarize it, but I'm like, it's so succinct. I'm just going to read it as is and summarize the rest of the story, because it kind of gives you all the other information that you might want. Apple's next operating system update, iOS 13, will include a dark mode option for easier nighttime viewing and improvements to CarPlay, the company's in-vehicle software. There will also be iPad-specific upgrades, like a new home screen, the ability to tab through multiple versions of a single app, like Pages in a web browser, and improvements to the file management system. The company will also integrate two new services, including a magazine subscription service, and its original video content efforts via iOS updates this year. The long-awaited, much-anticipated video content will finally be released this year, according to Mark Gurman. Is he right? I don't know. He's got stuff right before, but he's also not got stuff right before. But the fact that he's calling out their entire product roadmap here for the next year and a half leads me to believe that he's got some sources that are giving him some pretty good information. What do you think, Lewis?
Yeah, well, who knows? Another thing that he mentioned in here is that they might even release an augmented reality headset by 2020, as early as 2020.
Man, I forgot this part too, didn't I?
Well, you know.
Is there anything else?
Did you read it?
I didn't read the story. I just copied and pasted it here so that we could inform people about it. Yeah, I found this part to be really interesting too, because I was thinking, if Apple does release augmented reality goggles, what are they going to do? How are they going to work? I've done a full review of all the different augmented reality headsets that are currently on the market. It's all crap. There's nothing good out there. And a lot of it is used for business applications, so people working on factory floors, and it gives them information on a heads-up display that they might need as they're doing their jobs. And then mm-hmm. also in cycling, augmented reality right. is
yeah.
useful in cycling. Do you have an augmented reality computer, Leander, that you use for cycling?
No, but I tested one out. What was it called?
It was probably a Garmin. That seems to be one of the popular ones.
It wasn't Garmin. They just got bought, I think, by Garmin. It's on the tip of my tongue. It was actually kind of compelling, you know. Huh. It was actually better than I thought it was going to be, but the glasses were big and clunky, and the battery didn't last very long. It was only a couple of hours. And charging them was kind of like a pain, and you kind of looked like a dork.
with a giant helmet on, riding down the bike lane.
Right, I know, yeah.
You look like you're wearing the helmet from Spaceballs.
More of a duck.
Keep moving, asshole.
It's bad enough. You look like a duck anyway, but with these glasses on.
Yeah.
But it was kind of cool how the you could get all this information and sort of in the heads up display.
Yeah,
it was actually quite well done, and I thought, that is kind of pretty cool. But to be honest, I don't think it was cool enough to be that it was better than just looking at the computer on your handlebars, because you can just glance down and see all that information anyway, like on a good bike computer.
Yeah, but with that logic, why do you need an Apple Watch, right? All that stuff's available on your iPhone.
Well, the Apple Watch is taking your heartbeat, right? All these sort of biometrics, uh-huh. right? The computers, and you got to strap, got to put a heart strap on to get onto a bike computer. But and to get back to the original point, which is about Apple's VR glasses, it does make you wonder if the use case is there. Is Apple going to make the same mistake that Google did with the glass holes?
Oh, right, right. Which are still going, by the way. Well, that's why I'm interested to see what Apple does, because it's the Wild West right now. No one quite has this figured out. This technology looks like it might be promising, but no one really knows how to create a product that's compelling, that gives you a cool AR experience. Now, there's a lot of VR experiences that are compelling, but I'm speaking specifically about AR, which is augmented reality, right? It's different. And no one is really selling an augmented reality product that does anything cool. So I think the company that has the most popular product or the most hyped product is Leap. And their goggles look amazing. They look like something that Wesley Snipes would have worn in the 80s. But they don't actually do anything useful. They're like a $1,500, $2,000 headset that don't actually do anything that you would want to do. So I'm curious if Apple has cracked it and figured out a way to make these useful so people actually want to buy them. And I'm also curious to see what they look like, right?
They're going to get that killer app, don't they? They're going to crack the killer app. You know, what's the use case? What do people really want this for?
And not just digital touch, you know, or digital heartbeat or whatever. It's got to be something that's actually useful and not just them throwing stuff at the wall.
Well, for me, it would be telling me to put someone's name, you know, at a party.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that ever I hear. It's like, oh, my God, that would be so handy.
That would be handy, or remembering things in general. Just like, but you're talking about a movie, like I often do, and I'm trying to remember who the actor is. It'd be cool if the goggles were listening to me and then like show me the person's name, like right under their face, and I'm like, oh, that's right.
Yeah, right. Well, there's tons of use cases. You know that. You know, all the information. I mean, you could be looking down the street, you could see all the stores, their names, they've got if they've got sales on. You know, you could look at food that's put in front of you, and you can see a calorie count. You know, stuff like that. I think is feasible. But you know, would it be compelling enough for you to wear a pair of these ridiculous glasses all day?
Well, they gotta look cool. You know, they're gonna make them look cool. That's rule number one. They're not leaving Johnny Ives. They're not leaving his bosom until they look like something that Bono would want to wear, right?
Yeah, but then you know, another complication is like lenses. You know, like with all the people who wear glasses, you know, they have to be prescription lens compatible. You'd have to get prescription lenses to be put into them, and if you're gonna wear them all day.
I bet that's the least of their problems, to be honest.
Yeah, probably.
They had to have figured all this stuff out. I mean, Tim Cook wears glasses. So right. They had to have figured this part out. It's gonna look like those goggles that like old people wear when they're driving. They're like big and black, and they go all the way to wear on your face. Right. Except they have an Apple logo on the side, and they'll be white instead of black, you know?
Yeah.
That would actually be pretty cool. I would wear something like that. Okay, I think that's everything, right, Lewis? Or is there anything else I missed?
I don't know. Those are the things that stuck out to me, so.
Okay, yeah, good. All right.
As for if it's happening or not, who knows?
Yeah, well, we'll have to wait and see about that. But if they release a pair of AR goggles, well, depending on the cost, I'm almost certainly going to buy them. If they're like $3,000, I might just let Leander get them and have us give us his opinion on what they do. But hopefully they make them affordable, too, and they're not like the AR Goggles Pro, and they're like $4,000, right? Okay, let's see here. Before we move into this Apple Plans Netflix for Gamers subscription service interview with Alex E. Heath, who was so happy to finally get back on. He finally found it in to get back on the show. Let me go ahead and say thank you to Atlassian for supporting this episode. Incidents happen, and they require complex coordination between operations and software development teams who are putting out fires every day. That's why getting alerts immediately is critical. Thankfully, there's OpsGenie by Atlassian. Boy, this would benefit from a pair of AR goggles, right? Notification pops up, and you can see that your website's down. OpsGenie empowers dev and ops teams to plan for service disruptions and stay in control during incidents. It also gives teams the power to respond quickly and efficiently to unplanned issues and helps to notify all the right people through a smart combination of scheduling and escalation paths that account for things like time zones and holidays. Better yet, OpsGenie allows for deep flexibility in how, when, and where alerts are deployed with over 200 integrations like Jira, Amazon CloudWatch, Datadog, New Relic, and more. Plus, it tracks all activity and provides useful insights to improve future incident responses. With OpsGenie, your next incident doesn't stand a chance. Visit OpsGenie.com to sign up to get a free company account and add up to 5 team members. That's OpsGenie.com. Never miss a critical alert again with OpsGenie. Okay, Let's air the interview, and then when we come back, we'll wrap up with an all-new Under review where I got a real hot, hot pick. Get ready for an exclusive interview with Alex E. Heath.
Excellent!
Shit!
Hey, man.
You made it.
I know. I just, gosh, I haven't used the mic in so long, and I just...
So you're not using your Cultcast mic then?
No.
Oh, what a glorious unification that would have been. You sound magnificent, though. Your voice sounds like classical music. Sounds sweet and sultry. Yeah, it sounds real good.
Good.
What are you using?
Just the ear pods.
You're using ear pods, not the AirPods.
Yeah, ear pods.
Because remember that episode we did a while back where you used the AirPods? Yeah, and that was literally the worst sounding audio I have ever heard in my entire career doing this. You're like, oh yeah, here dude, just use my AirPods track. And I listened to it, I'm like, this is barely usable.
Yeah, that was a while ago, man.
Yeah, how long ago was that? That was the last time I spoke with you.
Probably like a year. I would imagine. God.
I feel like you and I need to talk at least 3 to 4 times a week. What do you say?
Yeah, I'd say easily. or day.
I'll see if I can work that into my schedule, but for you it's worth it. Well, it's magnificent hearing your voice again. And for your first big scoop. This is your global premiere scoop. This is the biggest one you've ever had.
I mean, it's an Apple scoop. I do a lot of reporting on companies that you do not cover on this show regularly.
You mean like Snapchat?
Yeah, and Facebook and other stuff like that, media.
Is anyone looking for scoops on Facebook or Snapchat, though? I mean, Apple scoops, that's what everyone wants. Those are the scoops people actually want.
You know, it's interesting. Like, the last year I've been kind of exclusively focused on doing scoops, I guess you could say. And I've had quite a few on Facebook and Snap and other companies like that. You can definitely tell with Apple there's a level of demand that doesn't exist for any other company, just in the reception that you get. Like I've been saving everywhere that the scoop has been kind of aggregated or written up, and it fills my monitor. It's like bigger than any other. It's like double the aggregation of any other scoop I've had, at least. So
People are hungry for it. They want to know what Apple's doing.
Yeah, and this was a good one because it's like...
This was a good one.
The services narrative around them is a big thing right now. And gaming is a big thing for every tech company, I think, period. There's a reason that Netflix says its top competitor is Fortnite, you know? Like, that's literally something that Reed Hastings said on the last Netflix call. It's like,
kidding.
He's like, we're not competing with, Amazon Prime or whatever, we're competing with Fortnite. Like, we're competing for people's attention, and games are increasingly where people, especially the quote unquote youth, are turning their attention to. Like, Fortnite has more daily use than Facebook right now. It's a monster. So it makes sense that Apple would want to double down on this.
Do you follow Fortnite stuff at all? Are you involved in that community at all? Have you played the game?
It's unbelievable. I do, to the extent that, like, at Cheddar we have a daily esports gaming show.
Cheddar. I forgot to mention Alex E. Heath. Cheddar. I just love saying it.
Yeah. So I've been following it through that. Just like, we have this really fun esports gaming show, and I actually went on to talk about this scoop yesterday, and it's super fun. The gaming world is like another language when you watch it, especially esports. Like, when you watch people talk about esports teams, tournaments, games, strategies, it's like another language if you don't know it, but it's fun.
I love it. I've been following it too, and I've always loved video games, and I've always loved playing first-person shooters, so it's been incredible to see what... I wouldn't call it a niche. There's always been a huge audience that loves first-person shooters, but to see it churn from you just play games in your living room with your buddies to, hey, let's all watch one person online play this game, and there's like millions of people watching it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and like my that's the Instant Pot in the background. If you hear that, making some.
Just
Indian.
Just don't go pee while we're recording this, okay? Because I'm going to broadcast. Man, it. I'm just going to let you know.
If anyone if anyone listening remembers that, you are an OG listener.
Oh, we've got some day one listeners.
I know you do, because like I get DMs almost and like at replies on a weekly basis, especially like when you randomly say something about my mother. And they're like, oh, Alex needs to come back on the show and vindicate his honor. So
I'm always very respectful when it comes to your mother.
I'm sure.
I hold her in the highest regard.
So I wouldn't know.
Well, that's a huge mistake on your part. Especially if you're trying to get some scoops, because we got scoops pretty much every show.
I'm just kidding. I do listen. I will have to confess, I don't listen to every episode, but I do listen pretty regularly. Actually, I was listening today, getting caught up. And, you know, I'm amazed that the show still exists, to be honest.
You and me both. Hey, even if you don't listen, do your old buddy a favor. Just download it, okay? Because we need every download. Everyone counts.
I have Overcast, so it automatically downloads no matter what. So
thank you. You can delete it 20 seconds after it's been pulled down. Yeah, that's all I care about.
I skip the ads, so.
Well, look. I really, there's a lot of things I could talk to you about right now. We haven't talked in so long. We could catch up, and hopefully we can connect again and do like a second hour.
Yeah,
and we could do a catch up, and then we could talk about what Cheddar's doing, because that's this whole new thing that seems to be growing, and we could talk about games and digital media, the state of digital media, and all that stuff. But let's stick to the Apple stuff for now. You had a huge, massive Apple scoop this week, which went global, and I'll be honest, I didn't even read your story because I almost did. I was like, oh, I should read this and bone up on what he said. And I was like, nope, this is Alex's first big global scoop, y'all. Tim Cook, he's fuming that you leaked this information out there. And I wanted to let you tell me what exactly the scoop was. All I know is Apple is potentially on the verge of announcing a gaming streaming type service, subscription service of some kind, and I'll let you take it from there. Scoop me, bro.
Okay, so it's kind of like a Netflix for games thing, and it's very early. I wouldn't say they're close to launching. So I reported that they started talking to game developers around the second half of 2018. So this is a very new thing, but you know, services and subscriptions in general for Apple are pretty new. Mm-hmm. I would say outside of, you know, Apple Music and kind of their core competencies that they've always had, I think 2019 is going to be defined by services and subscriptions for Apple. And you know, like I was just listening to Tim Cook on the Q4 earnings call or Q1 earnings call, whatever, and just like talking about services ad nauseum, and why they see subscriptions as a way to potentially offset, you know, plateauing hardware sales, which is a very real thing. And, you know, like they missed analyst expectations for iPhone sales again this quarter, and the whole, you know, the iPhone business is declining double-digit percentage. So they need software, they need services, and subscriptions are a great sticky way to get reoccurring revenue. And gaming is a huge market. Mobile gaming in particular is going to be, I think, $100 billion market by 2020. To put that number into perspective, Apple just announced a couple days ago that the amount of money it's paid out to app developers in the App Store for the entirety of the App Store's existence, so since 2008, is $120 billion. So it's just at what the mobile gaming market alone is expected to be. So that just goes to show what the potential, you know, pie is for Apple to take a slice of. And what's interesting is that no one has done this on the scale that Apple is going to be doing it. No one's tried a subscription product. I don't know if it's going to be specifically just for mobile. They could go any direction. They could maybe try to like do TV. You know, the Apple TV is really a missed opportunity with gaming. You know, there's a lot of ways they could go. I'm sure we'll definitely, you know, use those like indie titles that they love to tout in the App Store. You know, I don't know it's very early. We don't know the exact games. We don't know the price. We don't know how it's going to be marketed, the bundling, any of that. What I did also report is that they're interested in being a gaming publisher, and I'm unclear as to how it relates to the service, but I'm assuming it does, because what it means is they would pay, Apple would pay, to essentially distribute and market and do a lot of things for a game that a normal game publisher like a Supercell or something would do. And it's like, do you remember when Apple did like that Texas Hold'em game randomly? I think it was
no.
Like, yeah, they released this. They became a publisher for this one game, and it was an Apple Inc. game for Texas Hold'em. It was very early. I think it might have been like 2013, maybe. Yeah,
this sounds like a four-stall scheme.
I think I covered it at Colton Max. So yeah, it had to have been 6+ years ago. It was a total dud. But like, they tried it once, and I think they'll try it again. And I think the subscription service gives them an opportunity to like buy some exclusive game titles that are cool, that work on mobile, that are well designed. You know, not like the freemium crap that kind of like scams you into, you know, spending more money.
Sure.
And you know, tell the developer like, look, we know the economics of the App Store are not great right now, but like, we'll pay you up front to do the marketing and do all of the costs that you would normally have to, you know, give a percentage of your sales to some outside firm. And we'll just, we know the users, we have the App Store, we can put it on the front page of the App Store, which is like
exactly
the best
we can promote it for you. Yeah.
Right. So there's a couple pieces, but those are like the two main ones. It's going to be some kind of subscription service, and there's probably going to be some kind of publishing that Apple does, you know, as a publisher, which both things in and of themselves are pretty disruptive together. They could be really disruptive. So I don't know. It's kind of TBD on what it looks like. But it's definitely, you know, I think from what I've heard, everyone in Apple is like, how can we make more money off subscriptions? Like, how can we make more subscriptions?
That grosses me out. That's
why?
Not what
why
I want to hear.
Why does that gross you out?
I don't know. The whole, I like the idea of Apple being a hardware company and then giving subscriptions, or I should say software, as something that sells the hardware. I like that model, and I realize that model may not be working for them as much as it was previously. And the idea of them moving away from that into, let's get everyone on a subscription of some kind, I just don't like subscriptions unless they're really compelling, and very few subscription services these days are compelling. So the idea of them just getting into this business just is a little disheartening. Maybe it'll be cool. I don't know.
About it this way. Would you rather, I mean, how many times have you paid $2 to $3 to download some iOS game that you play for 2 days and then you put in a folder at the back of your iPhone home screen and you never play it again? I mean, I have like a whole folder of games that are like that.
I'm glad you brought this up, because I wanted to mention this. This is the paradox of what they're trying to do. They are trying to create a all-you-can-play gaming service aimed at people who really love to play games. So I would classify those people as hardcore gamers, right?
See, I would classify it as mid-core, because if you're...
Is there a mid-core? I didn't even know there was a mid-core.
Yes, there is. A mid-core is like someone who is not going to like buy an expensive PC rig and like do all that, but they would spend, you know, $5 to $10 to like have some cool games on their phone or on their tablet or potentially on their desktop. But like, they're not going to like go out and buy a custom rig and, you know, download a custom, a store or something like that. Like that's like the mid-core market as it's defined. And I think that's where Apple sees an opportunity, because that's like people who would pay, you know, $3 to $5 to download like an Altos Adventure or whatever. You know, I would much rather have, you know, pay like whatever, $5 to $10 a month and just get like a rotating list of cool, potentially indie, you know, beautifully designed games that like I don't have to feel like I'm spending money to just play for a couple days, you know. Like it's the same, like it's how it's disrupted music, it's how it's disrupted content consumption with video. Like, people love the subscription model for that, because you get to have kind of everything at your fingertips.
As long as it's a lot of stuff and it's not expensive. I like the way that Xbox is doing it. You're familiar with Xbox Game Pass, I'm sure.
Yeah, and it's arguably one of the most successful subscription services in gaming, for sure.
And I think the reason it's successful is because they just keep adding stuff to it. And so you get the whole back catalog, and then they're always adding new stuff, and they're adding brand new games to it as well. And I was going to say earlier, the problem if you're angling this towards hardcore gamers is hardcore gamers don't like mobile games, and those are the people who are willing to pay for games. So for me, that's the paradox, is you're trying to market a service to people who are willing to pay for games, but people who are willing to pay for games don't want to play them on mobile. So I'm not sure this is going to work in the US. Maybe it's going to work in China.
I would refute that, because games are by far the biggest source of revenue from the App Store. They're the largest category of apps in the App Store, and they make the most revenue by an incredibly wide margin.
But is that from people buying games, or is that from freemium games?
It's mostly freemium.
Because people are buying skins and stuff they like within the game.
Or, you know, Fortnite actually is a good example of how freemium should work, because you don't actually have to pay to win in Fortnite. Mm-hmm. You know, all the in-app purchases are optional. But, you know, there's a lot of other games that are more kind of psychological tricks, and they're really more like a business economics tricky thing than they are an actual game. It's all about getting people to spend more, and then you have like the stories of kids racking up, you know, hundreds of dollars of in-app purchases on their parents' iTunes account, you know, like that happens. So I could see Apple saying this is an answer to that, saying like, look, this freemium model has gotten out of hand. There's a few good people doing it, but like it allows for a lot of scammy behavior, and we think that we can kind of bring back quality gaming on mobile in a way that's accessible for a lot of people. I think that could be pretty appealing.
How much would you pay? How much would Alex E. Heath pay monthly for a selection of premium games? Truthfully, truthfully, you got to dish it out every month for a whole year.
Honestly, I'm not the right.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe $5, but I'm not. I don't play games on my phone, period. Like I did back in the day. I mean, I mm-hmm. guess like when there was that real kind of indie gold rush of iOS games, and it felt like every week there was this really cool new indie iPhone exclusive game. Like you remember like the days of like Cannibalt and like all that stuff. And Apple would really tout that, and they still do, but it's just, there's so many games now. And I just, when I look in the App Store, I just feel overwhelmed. I'm like, I don't even know what to download. And I think that could also be an answer, is like, look, the App Store is so crowded. We need some kind of curated collection that we can show off to people. And hey, there's a subscription. So that helps, you know, us from a revenue perspective.
And you sourced this story with not one, not two, not three, five different sources.
Yeah, I didn't,
How confident are you that this is actually going to materialize?
I said that number. I don't usually say number like that. Just because I am confident. I mean, this is like, yeah, it's definitely something.
You
that
think
Apple's,
it's a go?
It's definitely something Apple's working on. You know, whether they abandon it or it takes 5 years or whatever, like, you know, they often, like Project Titan and the car stuff is a perfect example, right? Like they thought they were going to do one thing and then they ended up doing something entirely different. So I don't think that'll be the case here. I think subscriptions are a big focus for the entire company. So, I think it's something that is going to be, you know, plowing ahead. But, you know, I put that in the story. I was like, look, like Apple always could change its plans. Like this is,
sure.
There's a reason they haven't announced this yet, you know?
Well, I didn't read your story, so I didn't catch that part.
I appreciate that. You really, you always do your homework.
I'm going to read it now. Like I said, I wanted you to come on and dazzle me with the details. I didn't want to ruin it for you and sit here and be like, oh yeah, I read that in your story. What else do you have for me?
Yeah, you always do your homework. It's
absolutely.
Why this podcast is always so
you
bad.
Don't get this podcast in 7 years without doing at least, you know, a half hour of homework every week.
It's amazing.
I'm not just reading the headlines here, Alex. Give me a break.
How many years has this podcast been going?
We're
going
to hit 7 in February. Good Can God. You believe that? 7 years. I kind of feel like we've finally made it. We're at 7 years now. So we're finally established. We should probably just wrap it up and say that's that. And it's not getting any better. I know that for sure. And you know, the thing is, I am honest. I always say this and people laugh, but I'm genuinely not sure if in the last 7 years, the podcast has gotten worse or better. I have no idea.
I have no idea either. I don't think, you know, this is a little selfish on my part, but I don't think you'll ever top like the kind of golden, I would call it the golden era of
the
like,
gold, the golden stream.
The golden stream.
Oh, the golden era.
Yeah. It just was really weird. And it was like the four of us and Leander was like not always like in Europe traveling.
Yeah. He doesn't drink as much anymore these days, which,
see,
you know, it took
that's
his edge.
Thing. Yeah. And like Buster actually like spoke words.
Oh
and,
yeah. I remember those days,
you know, like he seems like he's kind of fallen a little mute lately.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's trying to focus on the road. He's driving.
Yeah.
You know, he lives in a van, right?
Wait, really?
Yeah. That's people still, they think that I'm joking. I'm not joking. Buster lives in a white van. And he often tries the podcast from a McDonald's parking lot,
that's
leeching
incredible.
Off their Wi-Fi.
That's incredible. And he's blogging doing that?
Yes, that's how he lives his life. That's how Buster chooses to live his life now. So, you
God,
know.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
All right, let's wrap it up. I appreciate you taking time from the missus to come on the show.
Always.
And let me say this first. If you ever get tired of the money, the fame, the prestige that Cheddar's just throwing at you, you know, that stuff gets old, dude.
Yeah.
If you want to slow down life, we could discuss you possibly coming back on the Cultcast. It's not a sure thing, but we can discuss it. I'm open to it.
I'd be open if the right term sheet's in front of me.
We could pay you like $8,000 a year. Just consider it. Okay. $8,000. That's not nothing.
It's doable.
That's doable. I mean, think of all the free time you'll have too, because we only work like 3 hours a week.
Oh, that's true.
And where can people find you if they want to ask you about your big scoop?
Twitter's the easiest, at Alex E. Heath. So, I'm always tweeting.
Fantastic. I do like your tweets. And let me add one more thing. If you would, for me, say hi to your mother for me.
I mean, you already have a direct line, so what do I need to say?
That's a good point. I'll just text her right now. I'm just going to text her. And we're back. Was that not captivating? Oh my goodness. Let's go ahead and jump into an all new under review. Does anyone want to go first, or should I just launch into my pick while you guys figure out what you're going to talk about?
Well, you're just so hot, I can hardly wait.
Yeah. Well, I use that word strategically because what I got in my hands right now, Lewis, I'm holding it. It's a smart thermostat. Ooh, baby. And it can actually get your room real hot. And the reason I think this is exciting is because for a lot of people out there, they have baseboard heaters, they have electric heaters in their home, and so they don't have access to a smart thermostat. There's lots of thermostats out there that work with high voltage systems, high voltage heating systems, but the Nest isn't compatible with those systems. The Ecobee isn't compatible with those systems. And so I was trying to figure out a way to get my Nest to work with the heaters I have installed in Cult Command here, because it's freaking frigid over here in Seattle. And I've been chattering in here and shaking every morning when I come in, because it's like 50 degrees in here, because I only have like a portable heater in the space right now. And so I've been trying to figure out a way to get my Nest to work, and it involved all these hacks, like getting these transformers attached to your heating system and then attaching the transformers to your thermostat. And I was like, this is just ridiculous. I'm not going through all this. And so I started searching far and wide for a different way to get a smart thermostat working. And I ran across this product called Misa. Actually, I ran into their blog, MYSA. They make a really sexy looking thermostat. It's just a big white panel with white text. It's kind of like something that you would see in Johnny Ive's house, I think, or in the industrial design studio. It fits in with that white aesthetic. And get this, it's compatible with virtually every technology you could possibly want. It works with HomeKit, it works with Siri, it works with Alexa, it works with Google Assistant, it works with IFTTTTT. And I think that might be it. I don't know how many T's are in that.
You might have missed a couple of T's.
There might be a couple more T's that I missed. I think that's all the major systems there. So it literally works with everything. And full disclosure, I actually haven't gotten this thing installed yet. I'm going to install it this weekend. But I love the look of it. I also just put a video of this, just highlighting what it looks like and just kind of showing you what the features are. It's me reviewing an uninstalled thermostat. What could be more exciting than that on my YouTube channel?
Somebody called Steven Soderbergh.
I know. It's a Hollywood level production. And by the end of the video, I was truly embarrassed. I was like, what am I doing with my life? I'm reviewing a smart thermostat. So that immediately eliminates 95% of people. No one wants to hear about a smart thermostat. But not only is it a smart thermostat, but it only works with electric heaters. Now we're looking at like 2% of the U.S. population that might actually be interested in checking it out. But it's on my YouTube channel if you want to check it out, youtube.com/AirFunElijah. I will also post a link in the show notes. And you can see what it looks like. I think it's a really cool piece of technology. And if you have baseboard heaters, if you have those heaters in your wall with a little fan, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If you have a high voltage heating system, there really isn't anything out there for you that is like this. There are thermostats, as I mentioned, but this thing you can control with your iPhone wherever you are in the world.
Don't these baseboard heaters have built-in thermostats?
Some of them do, yeah, but they're just basic thermostats that work with temperature. And this you can set. So it opens up the entire suite of HomeKit functionality to you. So you could set in a geofence on your location, and when you leave, you could have your baseboards turn off or go to a specific temperature. You could have them turn on when you get home. So there's all this functionality that gets opened up when you are integrating a thermostat with HomeKit.
Huh.
It's really slick, actually. And the one other thing I wanted to mention was this thing is really highly reviewed on Amazon. It has almost like a perfect 5-star rating, so people seem to be really happy with it. So I was like, man, this thing looks legit. So it's under review. I'm still reviewing it. Clearly, I don't have a lot to say about the actual functionality since it's not installed in my wall yet, but that's upcoming. And it's only, I think, $130, which if you've ever purchased a smart thermostat, the Nest is $260. The Ecobee, that huge stinking turd of a thermostat, I believe is around the same price. So this is half the price, and unlike the Ecobee, it actually works. At least it seems to, compared to the reviews. So that's my pick, the Misa, M-Y-S-A, if you want to check it out online. I'll also link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah, I'm interested to see how it works. We have one room in our house that has an electric heater, and if it works, you know, it's kind of tempting.
Well, I'll let you know. I mean, it's just cheap enough where if you're going to be using it for one room, it still might be worth it.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you can actually string a bunch of these together in your house and control multiple rooms in your house.
Yeah, so you
get
a bundle.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah, and it works up to it works with 120 and 240 volt systems up to 3,800 watts, which is a lot of watts. So I don't know how many baseboards that would be. So, but I would imagine that's going to cover most people's situations, unless you live in a mansion. In which case, why does your mansion have baseboard heaters? Get yourself a furnace if you live in a mansion. Okay, who wants to go next, Leander? What do you got for us?
All right. So when you know on vacation, an absolute must. You have to take it with you every single day, along with your iPhone, is a battery pack.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you're not going to get through the whole day taking pictures and taking videos and touring around. So I was using this Mophie Charge Stream Power Station that's actually, it's a Qi charger, a Qi battery pack. So you just lay your phone on top of it, and it charges it wirelessly, which is really, really cool. I thought that was, you know, and it's a nice little size. It's actually a 6,000 milliamp pack. So I'm not sure what that is, but I think it was good for like at least a couple of charges of like an iPhone XS Max.
Yeah, probably almost three, because I think the battery's like almost 2,000 milliamps.
Okay, yeah. Well, we were all using it, you know, like so my wife and my daughter, we were all charging our phones off this one pack at various times of the day. We never managed to use up the whole pack in one day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the Qi charging actually was like, it was good when you're sitting down, like if you're at a cafe or something like that and you put your phone on top of it, it'll charge it there. Not so good when it's in your pocket, because it was difficult to maintain that, you know, that connection.
Mm-hmm.
Has to be just right. It actually did work if I put it in my back pocket of my jeans. You know, like it would hold it in the right place and it would charge it up there. But it was sort of unreliable enough that, you know, I took a cord along and, you know, used the cord to charge the phone when it was in my pocket. But the other good thing about it is it charges via USB-C. So you can recharge the battery pack really quickly.
Ooh, that is nice. Nice convenience. You don't have to have extra additional cords.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I hate the, you know, mini USB. Hate those things. The USB-C is much better. So yeah, I thought it's a really nice battery pack. It's really, you know, really, really nicely made. It's really solid. It's relatively inexpensive. It's $80, $79.95.
Oh, and I just looked it up. I was wrong. The milliamp hour of a XS Max is 3174, so it would charge that about twice.
And yeah,
then I guess the XS is 2658, so you know, two and a half times depending on what phone you have.
Yeah,
that's really nice though, because when you travel with your phone, in fact I was thinking about trying to find a charger just like this. When you travel, you got to bring a bunch of cables with you and stuff, and it would be nicer if you just had like that, so you can lay your phone down and just be done with it, and not have to figure out where to plug in your phone.
That's exactly what I was hoping, you know, like, because I didn't like all the cables dangling around everywhere. But you know, like I said, you know, I found that it didn't really sort of work in your pocket, because we were walking around all day, you know, going to museums and different sites and stuff like that. So, your phone, you know, tends to, like, it's better to recharge in your pocket, and because it's cheap charging, like, you know, it has to be sort of like in that sweet spot. If you move it out of the way, then it stops charging. So, you know, I did have to bring the cable along, which kind of sort of somewhat defeated the purpose, the object of it. But, I think there's plenty of other situations. Like, you know, if you're going to be working, like, in a coffee shop or something like that, you know, and you have this in your bag and you want to recharge your phone, that's fantastic for that, you know, because you can just sort of sit it there and it'll just charge without any wires. And, it charges it at 7.5 watts, too, which is actually pretty good.
And if you're going on a 2 to 3 day trip, this would be perfect. You could charge your phone once or twice. And I mean, bring one. If you brought a USB-C cable, you bring one anyway if you have an iPad. So you can, well, I guess it depends on what hardware you're carrying. I'm revealing too much. When I go on vacation, I bring my Mac, I bring my iPad, I bring my iPhone. I got like my back looks like RoboCop's bag. It's like just full of like electrical hardware, gear and stuff. It's ridiculous.
I know. I got pulled at the security. They're like, mucho electronicos. Because my bag was so full of stupid electronics. But like, you know, I had to do it for my wife and daughter because I had to bring all the stuff for their electronics too, you know, because I'm kind of in charge of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And they relegate all that stuff to you, right?
Yeah. And you know, I'm sort of overcautious. You know, I don't want to be caught out without something.
Yeah.
So I packed all this stuff that we didn't end up using. You know, like I wish it was just, you know, I could have done it more minimally and I would have just like taken this battery pack and no wires and it would have worked fine.
The Spanish airport police thought you were like a terrorist.
Yeah.
With all the wires in your bag and stuff. They're all like, uh-oh.
I had to unpack it, yeah.
Over here, please, senor. We need to check your body cavities.
I thought it was a jar of olives that I had in there that attracted their attention, but it was the electronics.
I know. When I go somewhere too, I have like 2 pairs of underwear and like 25 wires, different adapters.
Yeah, battery packs.
It just looks ridiculous every time but you know, I like to have all my technology with me when I go places, just in case. Just in case, you never know. Okay, the Mophie Charge Station, the Mophie Charge Stream Power Station. Lewis, take us home.
Alrighty, so what I've been testing out here is called the ConnectSense Smart Outlet 2.
ConnectSense Smart... you guys, these names are out of control. Jeez Louise. ConnectSense Smart Outlet 2, okay.
Yeah, and, you know, this is a two-outlet thing. You just plug it in right over a standard outlet. It basically takes up the entire thing. It's not the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. I mean, it's probably an inch and a half deep, so it really kind of sits out from your wall, right? But, you know, what's it covering up? It's covering up an outlet, so what's the big deal?
Yeah.
It's HomeKit compatible, which is what I was super interested in, and it allows you to control each outlet separately.
Ooh, that is nice.
Yeah, so, very basic, right? It works. You set it up just like any other HomeKit thing. It's set up very rapidly. Everything's been bulletproof the entire time I've been using it. You can go into the HomeKit app then, and you can, you know, name the outlet, for instance, you know, like the top plug. Maybe you want to plug your lava lamp into it, and you want to plug your Christmas tree into the other one, you know. And then you say that, then you, okay, Siri, turn on my lava lamp, you know, and boom, it happens, bang. And it's real responsive, works really great. Does have it's got like a light on a kind of like a strip down one side of it that has little blue LED that shows up when
that particular
outlet is on, which is, I don't know, either you like that or you don't.
How bright is it? Because if you're in a dark room, does that bother you?
You know what? I mean, it's another thing, right? I mean, if it's on, it's on. Mm-hmm. If it's off, it's off. So, for instance, if it was on a lamp and you're saying, oh, it's time to go to sleep, you turn the lamp off, it's not on anymore. So, I mean, yeah, you're going to see it in a dark room, but it's not that bright. In some ways, sometimes with these things, you know, not having that kind of an indicator can be a little bit like, you know, especially if something's like acting up, right? Because sometimes that happens with HomeKit stuff, right? Like nothing seems like it's what happened. I don't know exactly where the fault is. You know, like is my lamp out? Is what? You know, anyway, But the other thing that this is the thing that's really weird about it. It makes an audible click when it turns off. It's like,
huh.
And I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. It's quite, maybe, you know what I haven't done is dug into the settings and see if you can. I don't know if that's a physical noise. It's like something's actually or if it's like some kind of audio, you know, cue. I think it's physical. I don't think
there's something mechanical in there. You think like some switch?
I don't think that it's like a recording of a switch noise.
Well, they'd have to have a speaker or something.
It's probably
like
a transformer noise or something.
Yeah, it's odd. It's kind of noticeable.
I have a feeling you'll be describing this strange behavior to the fire department once they have put your house out.
Wow, that's hilarious. You should mention. I almost burned my house down yesterday.
Oh yeah, with this plug. You're like, smoke coming out of it.
No, I got one of those crazy, they're like a butane torch that you can burn up weeds with, right?
Oh, yeah, I got one of those.
I'm out there.
I love that thing.
I'm killing killing all these weeds in my sidewalk, which, you know, I come back from, you know, my vacation, it looks like a jungle in my massive, you know, 12 square foot front yard. I was burning this weed stuff up, and it kind of caught fire a little bit, and it kind of caught my garage door frame on fire a smidgen. I'm sitting in my house. I'm like, what's that smell? I go down the garage. It's got a little bit of smoke in it. I'm like, oh my God. It's like,
you went inside. You didn't even know that it was smoldering.
Yeah. It kind of went underneath this little part. And I was like, my God, that would be embarrassing. You know, the firefighters show up. I'm like, yeah, I was trying to kill some weeds. I had to burn my house down.
You can move into that tent with Olin. It is a double wide tent.
I was like, I was really embarrassed, man. Be careful with those things. You have one too, huh? But you have probably like a big yard and nice.
No, my yard's not huge. I just use it for. I actually don't use it for killing weeds. I use it for starting bonfires. So like, if I'm trying to start something in the fire pit, I bought this thing. It was completely superfluous when I bought it. I was like, nobody needs one of these things. But it's so much fun to have a blow. I mean, it's basically like a blowtorch.
Yeah, Nick. I was shocked when I turned it on the first time. I was like,
right.
I mean, 3-inch flame.
Exactly.
God,
and you're just wielding
me.
That thing. It makes you feel like a real man should. Am I right?
I thought for sure someone was going to call the police on me here in San Francisco.
Well, they almost called the fire department. Okay, so we got the Misa smart thermostat for electric heaters. We got the Mophie charge station, charge stream power station, the Kinect Sense smart outlet 2. Oh, baby, what an under review. We got all sorts of great gadgets on this episode, so I'll include links to all of these products in the show notes in case people want to check it out. But we're running way long. I don't even know. I honestly don't even know where we're at. My timer says I'm an hour 24, and I think we're pretty close to that. But we had a long pre-show today, so let's go ahead and wrap it up there. I'm done talking to you guys for today.
Mm-hmm.
I had to talk to you. I had to talk to Alexi Heath. That ruined my day yesterday. So I need a break. I need to go get some coffee or something. I'm calling it good. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the cult cast we have for you guys this week. If you want to come say hi or talk to us about any of the stories that we talked about on today's show, we're all on Twitter. I almost said Alex is Alex E. Heath. Lewis is at Lewis Wallace. Leander is at L. Kenny. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. This has been the cult cast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys. Leander, you take this one now that you're back.
Next time.
Oh.
I was just trying to say
what was that?
I know, it's a bit pathetic.
That was so sheepish.
Next time.
You barely give me any time to increase the sound of the music or anything. Gosh. You got to be more bold. Next time. Next time. Give me your manliest next time that you can possibly.
Next time.
That's as low as you can go. That's it.
All right, come on. Enough of the voice shaming.
Voice shaming.
I thought for sure you'd use like a Barcelona lisp, man.
Oh, next time.
There you go.
That's pretty good. Are there any tough sounding British guys? Do they even exist? Because yeah, I feel like the accent is just kind of hard.
James Bond.
Not Bond. The other guy. Which one? You know, Jason Statham.
Yeah.
That's the best you got? Oh, Lord.
Really?
He's not even English, isn't he? Isn't he Italian?
No, he's a British.
Oh. He looks Italian. I'm trying to think of a single tough British guy that I can't think of any of them.
Are you kidding me? You don't think Jason Statham is a tough guy?
I guess he is, but he's real small and lanky.
God.
Well, he used to be a championship diver.
He did?
Really? Yeah.
It's crazy.
Olympic diver.
Do you have any big, bad British guys?
Well, who am I trying to think of?
That's what I thought.
Well, it's been a while. I can't, you know, I'm trying to think. There's that guy, who's the name of that boxer that was just trying to defend the world heavyweight title?
Yeah. He's Irish, though. Right?
Is he? I thought he was British. I can't even remember his name.
I can't either. Are you talking about the UFC guy?
Yeah, no, I know who you mean. Conor, what's his face? He's Irish. No, he's a boxer, a heavyweight boxer. Tyson Fury.
Mm.
And I think he's British. And he's gigantic. He's like 6'8".
Mm-hmm. Oh, he is. He is big. That's pretty tall.
Superman. Henry Cavill.
Henry Cavill's American, though.
Are you sure about that?
I thought he was. Apparently, I don't know where anyone's from.
Yeah, he was born in Manchester, so he's British.
Henry Cavill is?
No. Tyson Fury.
We're all talking about somebody different now. All I know is Henry Cavill. What a dreamboat.
Gerard Butler.
Oh, he's an idiot. He's Scottish.
What about Gerard Depardieu? There's a real badass.
Tom Hardy.
Yeah, Tom Hardy.
See, this is you're proving my point. There's all these little dainty, you know, Euro boys.
He could
pretend
beat you.
To be tough.
I would not call that.
Definitely
guy
not.
Dainty.
Definitely
wow.
not. There's not a chance. I would block his punch, and I would.
Orlando Bloom.
Oh, well, yeah. He's okay.
Yeah.
I stand corrected. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
All right, I did a search here. Tough British guy. Oh, you know, what about Bear Grylls?
All 5'6" of him.
Well, you know, he eats stuff.
Yeah.
He survives out in the woods.
Yeah. That's all true.
Vinny Jones.
Vinny Jones.
He was a British footballer. He was famous for grabbing guys' nuts. on the field and biting them and headbutting them. And
Okay. Yeah, now here's a proper meathead. Vinny Jones.
Right.
Yeah, this guy looks like... He looks like an animal.
Yeah. He's got all scars and he's ugly.
Exactly. He looks like he's really good at headbutting.
Yep.
Okay. You proved me wrong. I never heard of this guy.
Bob Hoskins. You remember him?
Bob Hoskins.
You know, he was in Who Killed Roger Rabbit? But he's famous for like The Long Good Friday, which is a great British gangster movie.
This guy is your exemplar of English tough guy.
Well, he was for years. He was held out as like, you know, the movie tough guy. He's not really tough. He's actually quite a teddy bear.
He looks like a hobbit. He looks like Frodo Baggins' uncle.
You know, see him in some of his earlier roles, like The Long Good Friday. He's convincingly tough in that.
All right. Well, I'm gonna stop the recording because I gotta go pick up my kids. Let's see here.
I gotta call the missus. Talking about tough British guys. I'm gonna give her a bit of hell. All right, where's my dinner, late woman? And then she'll say, "Get it yourself." And I was like, "I'm sorry, I didn't mean it." Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello, Governor.
Hello, Governor.
You feel like you're back in Europe now, huh?
Especially with the Queen there, right.
That kind of looks like your mom a little bit.
Indeed, yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Does your mom wear glasses?
All old English ladies look alike. They all look like that. It's hard to tell them apart.
You're like, I love you, Mom. Who are you? Let go of me. Sorry.
Sorry, Your Majesty.
That's why you've been banished to America.